Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm interviewing Mark Coker, who is the founder of Smashwords, a new e-publishing platform, publishing and distribution platform. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, David. Great to be here.
Well, thanks for joining me. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to the place of starting Smashwords.
Well, my background goes back 20 years here in Silicon Valley as an entrepreneur and public relations person. But more recently, what got me into Smashwords was an experience that my wife and I had. We co-wrote a novel called BoobTube about 5 years ago. My wife is a former reporter for Soap Opera Weekly magazine, and we worked together to interview soap insiders and fictionalize all the dirt that we discovered about the dark side of Hollywood celebrity. And we did what every author is trained to do. We did multiple revisions. We hired professional editors and copy editors and proofreaders. And when the book was ready to be published, we went out and shopped it around to agents. We were lucky enough to find representation from Distel and Goderich. They're the same agency that represented Barack Obama's first book. And they were excited about the book, and we were excited to work with them. And they shopped the book around to large publishers of commercial women's fiction. And after 2 years, they were unable to sell the book. And the general feedback that they received was that editors at the publishers questioned whether or not there was a large enough market for the book. Some even questioned whether or not soap opera fans read books. So obviously, I found that as a, it was a frustrating experience that a publisher could stand between us and our potential audience. You know, even if our audience was, five people, 10 people, we wanted a chance to reach our audience. And it was actually our agent at Distel and Goderich who suggested we self-publish. But that gave me the bigger idea that, well, this is a big problem. There are millions of authors around the world who cannot publish their books because they don't pass that that commercial or that perceived commercial hurdle. So I came up with this idea to create an online publishing platform that would allow any author anywhere in the world to instantly publish an ebook simply by uploading a Microsoft Word document. And it would upload to the site and convert to all the different popular ebook reading formats. So that's what we did. We launched it a year and a half ago and focused initially on only self-published authors. But then in May of this year, May 2009, we expanded the service to support publishers as well.
And so at this point, how many titles are on the Smashwords site?
As of today, we're publishing over 4,400 titles.
So that's 4,400 titles in about a year and a half.
Yeah, 4,400 titles from just over 2,000 authors. Our content has gone up 30% in the last month and has doubled in the last 11 weeks. So we're seeing some nice acceleration here in terms of author adoption, publisher adoption, reader adoption.
So you might have a Moore's Law at work on your content side. How about on the reader side? What does that look like?
Same way. We're seeing as we publish more books, we're attracting more readers and more sales. It's all very closely correlated.
And
because
so,
at Smashwords, the authors do their own marketing. So
right.
Each time we sign on a new author, that author is bringing their own unique set of readers to the Smashwords community to purchase their books or sample their books.
Right. So the more authors you have and the more motivated they are to find readers for their work with the least amount of friction possible, it essentially is a self-generating system for you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, which I think is pretty brilliant.
Most people learn about Smashwords, most authors learn about Smashwords for the first time from a fellow author.
Right. Well, this sort of ties in a little bit to, I had a conversation with Richard Nash, formerly SoftSkull and now doing a thing called Cursor, who I know you know, and he talked a little bit about the community of authors being, you know, essentially the most important community of readers for a publishing company.
So oh, definitely.
I think that applies to you as well.
Well, I was just at a conference this weekend in New York, the Self-Publishing Expo conference, and one of the speakers talked about how readers or authors are the most voracious readers.
I think that's probably true, although obviously not uniformly. But because there are some writers who really only care about their own work, kind of to the exclusion of anybody else's. They're just so deeply involved in their own. But I'd say that's probably true. Most people who write also love to read. It's a this idea of writing as a cultural experience, a conversation, that makes sense. You know, if you read a lot and you want to express yourself in return, I found that, you know, often I would read, I've read something that has caused me to want to write something back, that it's a kind of, it is a cultural communication at its root.
Definitely. And, you know, we're seeing the nature of writing and communication change. And, you know, a good example is the blogosphere. And this, you know, this started several years ago, but it's quite common now that a blogger writes a story and then they invite the readers to participate in the story and to add to the story.
Right, we're seeing that on Twitter as well, the kind of
sure.
social creation of writing. It harkens back to early forms of oral telling, you know, that those were community events, that there might be a storyteller, but everyone who listened might then in turn repeat the story with their own embellishments. And so I think that's it's a pretty natural human activity to do that. So in terms of distribution of the books or content, let's call it the content that's published through Smashwords, how does it get from Smashwords out to readers?
Okay, well, the moment the book is uploaded into Smashwords, it goes through a little conversion process into all the different formats, and then it's instantly published at smashwords.com and ready for sale. The book is also instantly available via Stanza, the popular e-reading app on the iPhone, and Aldeco, which is the most popular e-reading app on Android phones. And then from there, the books are manually evaluated for inclusion in what we call our premium catalog. And if the book makes the cut for our premium catalog, then it is distributed to our major online retail partners. So in the last couple months, we've signed and announced two relationships. One is with Barnes & Noble, and the other is with Sony. And we have other relationships that are already signed. We just haven't announced them yet.
You don't want to announce any here. Just kidding. As I understand it, the author/publisher has the opportunity to set the price.
Yes. one of the central ideas behind the Smashwords platform is that we want to put the authors and publishers in complete control over their title. So the authors control all the metadata. They control the book description, the title, the content of the book. They can upload the book as many times as they want and update it, and they can set the price. So at Smashwords, the book is sold at what the author or publisher sets the price at. When it goes out into our retail distribution network, the retailers set the price.
So in a form, it's a form of net pricing then, because if I, let's say I publish a book, I set the price at, I'm just making this up, $3.99. How does it, let's say then when Barnes & Noble takes it, what is the business term between Smashwords and Barnes & Noble and then also the author/publisher? How does it work?
Well, we're contractually obligated with all the retailers not to disclose what the discount is, but I can tell you that roughly most of the major online retailers are in the range of 50% discount off of digital list. Some are a little more, some are a little higher. So we're negotiating those types of contracts, and obviously we're trying to get what we can for our authors, and then we take whatever the proceeds are from the sales at those retailers and distribute 85% of that net back to the author or publisher.
Right, pretty good
So
deal for the author because you're taking essentially a 15% handling charge if you want to look at it that way.
yeah, and if you look at it off of digital list, the handling charge averages only about 7.5%
Right, because
with digital list.
you're taking it off of the wholesale price essentially.
Yeah.
And so the well, so in terms of kind of the theory of how this works, obviously you could have a publisher that does print books, and does ebooks in other channels could also use Smashwords. There's no reason why a publisher or an individual self-publishing author couldn't use Smashwords in addition to all other forms, correct?
Right, as long as the author or the publisher controls the digital rights, then they can work with us. And we're non-exclusive.
Right, so you're not saying if you publish with Smashwords, you can't go to Kindle or you can't go to some other platform or publish anywhere else. It's just you're an additional platform to all the others.
Right.
And the promise that, or I guess the attraction that you have is that you've got a community of readers that is unique to you, plus you have digital distribution to some of these other retailers that you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, at the very simplest level, we're another retail outlet at Smashwords.com. But realistically, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we're a really small retailer. Our traffic is dwarfed by all the other major online retailers.
Well, and that sort of raises an interesting point. What do you see the future of digital publishing? How do you think this will evolve, and what will your role be? And you know, what will other, you know, there's sort of an ecosystem evolving of digital publishing. How do you see it evolving?
Well, I'm really interested in the emerging supply chain for digital books. If you look at the supply chain for print books, I think the chain is really broken from the perspective of authors and publishers. There are, you know, too many intermediaries, and you know, although the intermediaries individually are all extremely efficient in providing value in what they do, a lot of the effort is involved in moving around, you know, bits of paper using carbon-fueled trucks. And so there's a lot of expense in that and having all those different intermediaries. I think as we look ahead to the ebook supply chain, it's still nascent today, but we're going to see a completely different supply chain, one that I think puts more of the power in the hands of the author and the publisher. It's a supply chain that won't have, it'll have multiple connections to the consumer. You know, looking back at print, most publishers have a hands-off relationship with the customer. They don't know who the customer is. They can kind of envision who they think the customer might be, but it's the retailer who has the relationship with the customer. With ebooks, publishers have an opportunity to form direct relationships with the consumer, and so this has a direct impact on how I think the ebook supply chain will evolve. Publishers will have the ability to sell directly to their customers or sell through, you know, some intermediaries. The role that I see Smashwords playing is, you know, we will serve as the digital distribution infrastructure for publishers and for authors. We want to be the pipe between the author and publisher and their reader. So if the author and publisher wants to go direct to the reader, we'll enable that. If they want to sell through just a single retailer, we can do that. And if they want to sell through multiple retailers, we can do that.
And you sort of look at yourself, therefore, as device agnostic and almost customer retailer agnostic, because you're basically saying, as the pipe, you'll do whatever the author slash publisher, or even let's look at it from the consumer point of view, that whatever anybody wants, you can provide.
That's the direction we're moving in, yes.
So, and just speaking of formats, you know, one of the things I think, you know, is a discussion that has been going on lately, the notion that the multiplicity of formats and potentially of devices is inhibiting the growth of an e-book or e-content marketplace, simply because consumers are faced with so many choices that in many cases they worry about the long lasting, you know, which device will last, or if I invest in a particular device and format, what happens if that device and format loses over time and I'm left with an orphan. How do you see that happening? You know, what do you think will happen over the next few years in terms of reading?
There's a lot of chatter among, you know, progressive ebook people about the evils of digital rights management and DRM and how that's hurting ebook adoption. And, you know, while I think that for the long term, you know, DRM will go away, I don't think it's really hurting ebook adoption at all. I would hazard to say that 95% of the customers who are buying a book on the Amazon Kindle or on the Sony Reader don't really know that book they're purchasing is DRM protected. They don't know what DRM is. And today they don't really care, because all they want to do is read that book on their device. I think where the problem will come will be down the line. I think all these DRM protected books represent potential ticking time bombs for the retailers, when that customer who maybe today they're super happy with their Amazon Kindle, maybe 5 years from now they want to go with some new e-reading device that hasn't even been invented yet, and they want to port their books from their Kindle to that new e-reading device. If they're unable to move their book, they will be unhappy when they learn that the book that they bought isn't their book.
Well, that is true. And people, I think, will have to learn, consumers that is, and maybe even the resellers will have to address this, that you're essentially buying a limited license to use that content. You don't really literally own it. In the same way that iTunes has to reconcile that over time, I think people become dissatisfied that, you know, if their hard drive crashes, all the music that they bought, if they didn't back it up very well, they may lose. And even though Apple actually knows what you bought and could restore it to you, they don't. Maybe because it's too complicated, or, you know, in the aggregate it's too much work, or maybe they just want you to buy another version. But same thing is true of an ebook, at least at this moment. You have a limited right to use it. You can't share it. You can't really send it to somebody else. And if your device becomes obsolete, you may not be able to transfer that file to another machine.
Yeah, and I think we're to the point where the day that becomes a significant issue for enough customers, that the major online retailers will force a very rapid change to DRM-free. You know, currently, you know, I believe that the major online retailers are primarily doing DRM because that's what the major publishers want. The large New York publishers won't put their books out without DRM protection. You know, I don't think, you know, the retailers have any strong philosophical belief that these books should be protected. I think they're doing it for the publishers.
Which is a fair point. If you're, you know, if you are a publisher, the issue then is how do you care for, you know, how do you learn a or create a business model that enables you to make money if the e-file can be loaned, copied, you know, kind of at random, the friction level is very low, so it's really easy for ebooks to get out in the wild. And the DRM argument kind of always ends up at that point. You know, that there is the argument between those who believe in free distribution will increase sales in the long run or increase revenues, and those who believe that it's a zero-sum game. And we have not seen that argument played out.
Right. You know, I think that the solution to the problem, you know, how does a publisher monetize content that is DRM free, really comes down to customer education, and that's an aspect that nobody really talks about. The current approach is, let's just put handcuffs on the customer and assume that they're a criminal. And I think that's the wrong approach. I think the proper approach is to educate the customer. And it's something we do at Smashwords. We encourage all of our authors and publishers on the very first page of the book to write a license statement that reminds the customer that this book is licensed for their personal enjoyment only, and that they're not authorized to share it or distribute it with other people, not allowed to resell it. And if they're reading this book and they didn't purchase it, or it wasn't expressly purchased for their benefit, then they should go to smashwords.com and purchase a copy for their own use. You know, thank you for supporting the hard work of this author. I think most customers are honest. And if you look at the demographics of who purchases books today, they're those of us in the over 40 crowd. And we're smart enough to know that if we want to go browse illegal underground file sharing sites, we're exposing ourselves to viruses and we're doing something wrong. We're stealing a book that was created thanks to the hard work of an author or publisher, and they deserve compensation. So I think with some simple education, it can go a long way to combat this problem of piracy. For people who will only read a pirated book, you're never going to sell them a book anyway. It doesn't matter if your book is only restricted to print. Print books are pirated digitally within hours of being published if it's a popular book. So you can't stop piracy, but you can discourage it and you can reduce it.
Right, I think that's a very interesting argument, and one that has some value. Well, you know, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I really, you know, I certainly recommend people visit smashwords.com. I think what you're doing is really worth looking at for anybody who's interested in books, e-publishing, and the evolution of how this is going to work in a digital environment. Thanks, Mark Coker. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks.
Thanks, David.
Take care.